We continue this morning to study the book of Esther. Just to remind you, Haman, who figures quite a bit in this particular portion, is the king's viceroy, right? A very important person in the kingdom. Mordecai is Esther's relative. Uncle, cousin, we're not sure, but in any case, he was also her foster father. Mordecai and Haman are enemies, and the reason is that Mordecai refused to bow down to Haman. I am reading from the third chapter of Esther, verses 7 to 13. In the first month, which is the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of King Ahasuerus, they cast Pur, which means the lot, before Haman for the day and for the month. And the lot fell on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. Then Haman said to King Ahasuerus, "There is a certain people scattered and separated among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from those of every other people, and they do not keep the king's laws, so that it is not appropriate for the king to tolerate them. If it please the king, let a decree be issued for their destruction, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who have charge of the king's business, so that they may put it into the king's treasuries." So the king took his signet ring from his hand and gave it to Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. The king said to Haman, "The money is given to you, and the people as well, to do with them as it seems good to you." Then the king's secretaries were summoned on the 13th day of the first month, and an edict, according to all that Haman commanded, was written to the king's satraps and to the governors over all the provinces and to the officials of all the peoples, to every province in its own script, and every people in its own language. It was written in the name of King Ahasuerus and sealed with the king's ring. Letters were sent by couriers to all the king's provinces, giving orders to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all Jews, young and old, women and children, in one day, the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, and to plunder their goods.
When I was in grade 7 or 8, I had a very negative impression of Esther. She was one of the three women that were taught in Sunday school, other than Mary, the mother of Jesus. The other two were Sarah and Ruth. But Esther was a beauty queen. That's the way I felt about it then. She only did what the men in her life told her to do. She had no character. Well, my father, when he discovered that I had these negative feelings, challenged me to read the book through in one sitting. It takes less than half an hour. So I did it, and I was enthralled. It totally changed my image of Esther. And at the supper table of the day that I read it, I was so excited, and I talked about Esther and about her relationship with God and how she prayed to God, and God told her to go bravely to the king, and God spared the life of her people through Esther. And my dad said, "Norma, God is not even mentioned in the book of Esther." Well, I was quite indignant, and I argued with him. Of course, I was a teenager and I knew more than my father, who was a pastor and had studied Bible and theology. I said, "Dad, the book is filled with God." So he said, "Okay, you go back and read the book again and mark all the passages that mention God." I asked him, "Should I do it in my Bible?" And he said, "If you want to." Well, of course, I lost that argument. God is not mentioned in the book of Esther, and nor do we learn anything about the temple or the tabernacle like so many of the other Old Testament books, or do we learn anything about their practices of prayer and sacrifice and all the other distinctive Jewish practices. None of that is mentioned in the book of Esther, but it does explain why the Jews in that Persian period began celebrating a new festival called Purim. Now, the law of Moses, the Torah, had earlier described how God's mighty acts of deliverance lay behind holidays like Passover and tabernacles. This book of Esther shows how God intervened once more to save the Jews, which led to the celebration of this amazing rescue in the Feast of Purim. I was right in one sense in that discussion on God. The book of Esther is filled with God. It's a dramatic account which can give us insight into God's purposeful plan for our lives, and certainly for Esther's and Mordecai's and the Jewish people. It's a very fast-moving story. I do challenge you to spend a half an hour and just read it straight through. And it occurs during the reign of the Persian king Xerxes, or as most of our Bible version call him, Ahasuerus. And how he worked, and as I said before, God's name is never mentioned. The king's name, or reference to the king, comes up about 175 times. Yet, you really don't, well, you think about the king, but you don't see him as a main character at all. It's God that's the main character, whose name is not mentioned at all. His presence and his influence are very strong throughout the whole book. And we recognize God's protection back then, and now as well, through the timing and combination of events as they unfold. The book features lots of food. There's two banquets in the beginning, the two banquets in the beginning are hosted by the king, and then the two given by Esther in the middle, and then two celebrated by the grateful Jews at the end. And since this story is continuously told in synagogues and Jewish communities year after year, it's written for a reader, and the reader is placed right in the middle of all the action. And when you read it, you can not only join in celebrating God's deliverance, you can ask yourself, as Mordecai asked Esther, for what great purpose did God bring me into my own place today in life? For such a time as this, or to be specific, what purpose has God brought you to at this point of your life? So the story opens with this festival that the king of Persia threw for his hundreds of closest cohorts. Joel referred to this a bit, but I believe in repetition, so I'm going to repeat a bit of it again. This king was ruler over 127 provinces that stretched from current-day Ethiopia to current-day India. That's a big stretch of land, but he was king over that. Well, they all got drunk. And the king called for his queen Vashti to display herself in front of all the drunks that were there, and she refused to do it. And the king was upset, and his friend said, "You can't let her do this, because women will start doing this to their husbands all over the place." And so he got rid of Vashti, probably moved her to some lowly place in the palace. However, a couple of years later, he started feeling sorry for himself, and so his servant suggested he throw a beauty contest for all the young virgins from Ethiopia to India. And he did that and chose 400 of the most beautiful. And they came to his palace, and Esther was one of them. And they had a whole year of pampering. Now, back when I was 13 or 14, I thought that was just, what a waste of time. Now, at the age of 79, wouldn't it be neat? I could do without all the perfume that it mentions. But I imagine they got massages and had their hair brushed. And, oh, of course, at 79, I wouldn't have been one of the 400 virgins chosen at that time. But anyway, so the king does this, and her guardian, Mordecai, had suggested that she enter. And this is one of the places that, for me, you see God's influence. So they go through this year of pampering, and then they get to spend a night with the king. That had to take a long time, 400. He had to be a very busy king. Anyway, he was stunned by Esther's beauty among those 400, and eventually Esther was chosen to be the queen. And again, God's influence is there. Now, our Esther read this morning about Haman's space in this. He was second in command to the king. And I want to bring a little aside that was interesting to me. It's not specifically mentioned in this book, but it gave me a good understanding of the relationship between Haman and Mordecai. Mordecai was a Benjamite from the tribe of Benjamin, and he was related to Kish, who was also related to King Saul 1,000 years earlier. And then Haman was related to Agag, and the Agagites had been defeated by King Saul 1,000 years previous, and Saul had been told he was to kill this king, and Saul hadn't done it, so Samuel the prophet in Saul's time went, and he cut Agag into a lot of little pieces. This history came down through 1,000 years, Haman remembering what Mordecai's relatives had done to his leader, and Mordecai remembering the anger that was there. And so they knew their history that had been established 1,000 years before. So the two families had resentments. Well, Haman had gotten the king to sign an order that everyone should bow down to him as he went by. And, of course, Mordecai did not. So the 1,000-year feud raises its ugly head. Well, Haman got the king to sign another order with his seal on his ring that not only was Mordecai to be killed, but all of the Jews. Again, another potential genocide for the Jewish people.
I'm reading from chapter 4, actually the whole of the chapter. When Mordecai learned that all that had been done, Mordecai tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and ashes and went through the city wailing with a loud and bitter cry. He went up to the entrance of the king's gate, for no one might enter the king's gate clothed in sackcloth. In every province, wherever the king's command and his decree came, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting and weeping and lamenting, and most of them lay in sackcloth and ashes. When Esther's maids and her eunuchs came and told her, the queen was deeply distressed. She sent garments to clothe Mordecai so that he might take off his sackcloth, but he would not accept them. Then Esther called for Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs, who had been appointed to attend her, and ordered him to go to Mordecai to learn what was happening and why. Hathach went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city in front of the king's gate, and Mordecai told him all that had happened to him and the exact sum of money that Haman had promised to pay into the king's treasuries for the destruction of the Jews. Mordecai also gave him a copy of the written decree issued in Susa for their destruction, that he might show it to Esther, explain it to her, and charge her to go to the king and make supplication to him and entreat him for her people. Hathach went and told Esther what Mordecai had said. Then Esther spoke to Hathach and gave him a message for Mordecai's, saying, "All the king's servants and the people and the king's provinces know that if any man and woman goes to the king inside the inner court without being called, there is but one law. All alike are to be put to death. Only if the king holds out the golden scepter to someone, may they present themselves, and may they live. I myself have not been called to come to the king for 30 days. When they told Mordecai what Esther had said, Mordecai told him to reply to Esther, "Do not think that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silence at such a time as this, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another quarter, and you and your father's family will perish. Who knows? Perhaps you have come to royal dignity for just such a time as this. Then Esther said in reply to Mordecai, go gather all the Jews to be found in Susa and hold a fast on my behalf, and neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maids will also fast as you do. After that, I will go to the king, though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. Mordecai then went away, did everything as Esther had ordered him.
I believe in repetition, and I just want to, in my own words, emphasize a few things that Esther just read. So we have Mordecai, when hearing about this genocidal decree, dressing in the traditional clothes that the Jewish wore in mourning. Like, they tore their clothes, they put on sackcloth and ashes, and he went to the palace gate, knowing that he would not be able to get into the palace. Esther sends down clothing for him, and he refuses it. If you remember that last week when we read, there was that point when Mordecai had saved the lives, had saved the life of the king after overhearing two of the palace courtiers talking and saying they were going to kill the king. We don't know why. Mordecai told someone who went and told Esther, and Esther told the king, and it saved the king's life. And again, we see God in that whole illustration. However, Esther looks out. She sees that Mordecai is in sackcloth and ashes. She hasn't heard about this decree, and she wonders what the problem is. So Mordecai sends up a copy of the decree with the message that she is supposed to go to the king to stop this termination of her people. But if you were listening, it's not as simple as that. No one could go into the king's presence at the time of the Persians unless he gave the invitation. In fact, if someone entered the king's presence without his invitation, they could be killed. So Esther is in a dilemma. The king hadn't called for her for over a month. And if she went to him without being invited, she could be killed on the spot. And she'd not only be breaking royal protocol, but she'd be risking her own life. And she reminds Mordecai of this, but that doesn't stop him. He comes back. Well, he doesn't come back. He sends a message back and forth, and he's calling for her courage. And he tells her in chapter 4, if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this. So Esther responds and asks him to gather together the people that live near him and fast for 3 days, and she'd do the same with her maids. And it's important to remember that back then, fasting wasn't for health and beauty. Fasting in the Jewish tradition calls for prayer to God. There was no fast without prayer. And again, I see God's influence in this story.
Reading from chapter 5, excuse me, verses 1 to 8. On the third day, Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the king's palace, opposite the king's hall. The king was sitting on his royal throne inside the palace, opposite the entrance to the palace. As soon as he saw Queen Esther standing in the court, she won his favor, and he held out to her the golden scepter that was in his hand. Then Esther approached and touched the top of the scepter. The king said to her, "What is it, Queen Esther? What is your request? It shall be given you, even to the half of my kingdom." Then Esther said, "If it pleases the king, let the king and Haman come today to a banquet that I have prepared for the king." Then the king said, "Bring Haman quickly, so that we may do as Esther desires." So the king and Haman came to the banquet that Esther had prepared. When they were drinking wine, the king said to Esther, "What is your petition?" It shall be granted you, and what is your request? Even to the half of my kingdom, it shall be fulfilled. Then Esther said, this is my petition and request. If I have won the king's favor, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition and fulfill my request, let the king and Haman come tomorrow to the banquet that I will prepare for them, and then I will do as the king has said. This is the word of the Lord.
So we have Esther getting this word from Mordecai, and 3 days later, after the days of fasting, as was read, Esther approached the throne, and the king raises his scepter and invites her in. And she asks him for this private dinner in the quarters and to bring Haman along. Haman is excited out of his mind, and it almost makes him forget his anger and fury at Mordecai and all the Jews. But on his way home, he passes Mordecai, standing and not bowing, and he's filled with rage again. His family and friends suggest how to get rid of Mordecai, so he prepares a gallows that's 23 meters high. And then he threw lots to decide which date he would carry out this massacre of the Jews. Well, as Haman is doing all this, the night of that, the king couldn't sleep, and he called for the journal that contained all the record of the reign that was written about him. And in it, as he's reading it, he discovers Mordecai had exposed a plot against him and saved his life, and he also learns that Mordecai was never rewarded or honored for doing this. The king looks out and sees Haman in the courtyard and has him come up to talk to him. And he said to Haman, how would you honor someone that I think highly of? Well, of course, Haman, not being the least bit humble or modest, thought he was talking about himself. So he told the king how he'd like to be honored. And then the king says to Haman, okay, I want you to get one of my robes and the crown and one of my horses, and I want you to put them on, the robes and crown on Mordecai, and let him get up on the horse, and you lead him through the streets and shout to all the people around you that this is a man who has honored the king. Haman had to have gone through excruciating emotions on that day, because he was humiliated by doing this, but he had to do it. Well, they had the dinner, went away again, and as the last part that we read there, that Esther asked if they could have another dinner. And so Haman comes back the second night, and it's at this second dinner that Esther reveals that Haman was the villain who was going to kill her people. And this is the first place in the whole book where she reveals that she is a Jew. So the king has Haman killed on the gallows he built for Mordecai. However, this didn't solve the problem of killing the Jews from Ethiopia to India. According to Persian law, anything signed with the ruler's seal could not be undone, not even by the king. So there was no way that the 2 days of killing the Jews could be stopped. But the king gave his signet ring to Mordecai and told him to send out a new edict under his seal. The Jews could defend themselves during these days. Read this book. They defended themselves very well, to the point where people started becoming Jews in order to have their lives saved. When the killing was over, the Jews celebrated. They called it the Festival of Purim, named after the lots that Haman had cast to set the dates. And even today, in many Jewish communities and synagogues, they celebrate the Feast of Purim, and they give gifts to the poor, and sometimes they read the book of Esther out loud, and when the name of Haman is mentioned, they boo and make noises, and when the name of Esther is mentioned, they wave flags, much as some of the children were waving the Canadian flag, but they wave flags at Esther's name. They had a festive meal, they gave gift foods to friends, and they took care of the poor. Sometimes they make triangular-shaped cookies that are named for Haman. I'm not sure what the triangle represents, but that's what they do. And sometimes they dress up in costume. They hold plays and festivals, and there's a spirit of liveliness and fun on Purim. It's a day to let loose and just be Jewish and celebrate their deliverance. And it's a time of celebrating God pulling the strings to care for his nation. God, through Mordecai, placed Esther in the one influential spot to stop the genocide of her people. It has a happy ending, this little book. Mordecai rises to be an influential leader, sort of a prime minister in the areas from Ethiopia to India. And he looks out for the Jews throughout that whole nation, which is one of the reasons that this festival is still celebrated. But God was involved in this book all the way through, and he's also involved today. There are times in my life when I have to stop and ask myself, where is God in this situation? You know, times when I might be riled up, times when I don't know what to do, times when I am in situations and wonder how I got there, and I go, where is God in this situation? And then when God has my attention and has showed me his involvement, I ask him, what are you calling me to in this situation? I have found those two questions very helpful in my life. And I suggest that you ask those questions. For such a time as this in your life, what is God calling you to? The closing prayer for this sermon is found on the top of page 3 of your bulletin.